Hello, everybody. Welcome to the inaugural podcast of the Primary Reading Class Political Action Committee. My name is Todd Workman, and I will be your host today. This will serve as an official weekly update for our Primary the Ruling Class movement. This is going to be our first podcast ever, and I couldn't think of a better way to kick it off than to interview the man that founded the movement and see if we can't get him to talk a little bit more about the book he wrote and more or less what started this whole thing and lay out the grand strategy for what we're doing. Some of you may know him, but of course I'm talking about Bill Luzniski. I've known Bill for approximately 15 years, and when I learned about Primary the Ruling Class, the Political Action Committee, I jumped at the chance to work with him for several reasons. I'll go through a few of them. There's many more, but these are the ones that kind of stand out to me. Of course, he's a professional. Bill's a straightforward guy. He does what he says he's going to do. He's always willing to help someone else. And he's a family man. He's a Christian. He's a role model for a lot of people, including myself. But in many ways, he's just an ordinary guy that maybe you'd want to sit down and have a beer with. What's also pretty cool about Bill is he's led a pretty extraordinary life. In fact, I'm going to go through some stuff here in a minute. And when I go through that, I was reading them to my oldest daughter, and she said, you know what, I want to go on vacation with Bill. So they are pretty extraordinary, and I'll get to them here in a second. But among some of those things is he's a best-selling author. And before I bring him on here, I want to read a few of the things that I found in the About the Author section of one of his books. And by the way, like I said, these are just a few things. The guy's done a lot of really cool stuff. So anyway, I'll go through them. But Bill's always one of those guys that's lived in the present and likes to dream of the future. And like many authors, he draws a lot of his real-life experiences in his writing. He pulls from those experiences in life, and he still considers this to be the first half of his adult life. And some of the things he's done is he's hiked in the rainforest and walked in the Copacabana on a whitewater raft in the mountains of Rio de Janeiro. He's actually read the Bible, the Constitution of the United States, and the Declaration of Independence. He's received standing ovations from thousands of listeners for speeches given across four continents spanning three decades. Bill's witnessed unbelievable abject poverty and dined in some of the most renowned restaurants in the world. He's been a pallbearer, and he's been named a godfather. He's cruised the Caribbean, scuba dived some of the most beautiful locations in the world. He has helped support an orphanage in Honduras and hot air balloon and picnic in remote locations, only accessible by helicopter. He speaks another language. He's traveled high-speed trains of Europe and gazed open-mouthed at some of the most amazing frescoes and architecture. He owns a tuxedo. He met his future wife while traveling on another continent and returned there many times to court her. He's eaten lunch atop Schildhorn Mountain, Swiss Alps, and stayed at the Grand Victoria Jungfrau. It was a palace built for Queen Victoria in 1856. He's piloted a small plane, and he stood side by side with the governor of Guam, bracing against the ever-blowing winds, standing on the steps of the Congress building overlooking paradise. He's driven a NASCAR and driven a demolition derby. He's married in a third world country on another continent in another language, in a church whose immense beauty was in its poverty and austerity. He has now written multiple best-selling novels and sold tens of thousands of copies across five continents. And I know Bill, and I know one thing, he hopes this pales in comparison to what he does in the future. Without any further ado, let me bring on Bill. Bill, are you there? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Todd. Thank you. I appreciate it. I think that's probably the first time I've ever heard anybody verbalize some of those things. I appreciate that. It was a very, very nice introduction. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you, Bill. First of all, we should probably let everyone know you use a couple of different names when you're writing your books, pen names. Why do you use those names, and what are they?
Simply because my last name is Luzniski. So nobody can spell that, let alone, or, you know, pronounce it, let alone spell it. And that's not a good thing for an author. So for my fiction, I think I've got six novels published now, science fiction mainly. I use the pen name William Lee Gordon. It's actually the name I was born with. And then for the nonfiction, I use Stress-Free Bill. And that's how a lot of people online have known me, from the blogs and online presences I've had. So that's really all there is to it.
Okay. I want to speak in specifically about one of your books. This one is not fiction. And it's the one that started the movement. It's not about donkeys and elephants, branding the real enemy. And it became a number one bestseller on the Amazon list. And in that book, you speak of different subjects, but the main gist of it is it sounds like you're saying the real battle in Washington, D.C. isn't the battle between Republicans and Democrats. You want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I would love to, because it's very, very true. And it's something, it's a bit of misdirection that's going on right now. It's been perpetrated on the American public. And I don't mean to make it sound totally sinister, because it just kind of evolved this way. But it's very true. I mean, we look at what's going on politically. We look at all the vitriol. We can see politicians from both sides of the aisle screaming at each other during the day. But I'll guarantee you, there's a good number of them that are having dinner with each other in the evening, the very same evening. And the very simple reason is this. There is a culture that has developed throughout Washington politicians. Now, it's not restricted to them, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that, but among the political elite, so to speak, or what some people call the establishment on both sides of the aisle, there is an attitude. It's a very arrogant attitude. These are people that that feel like they're smarter than you and I, Todd. They feel like they are in a better position to make decisions than we are. And they deeply resent people like you and I and other Americans telling them how to run the government. And if that goes against the grain of the Constitution, so what, as far as they're concerned? It's a, like I said, it's a very elitist, very arrogant attitude. And it crosses both aisles, and that's what's going on there. So while the rest of us in the country are focused on the, you know, the arguments and conflicts back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, the real enemy, or what we call the establishment, or what we call the ruling class culture. And that's where the real battle lines are being drawn. And when you start looking at politics through that lens, instead of just Republican versus Democrat, everything starts making sense. You know, one of the reasons I wrote the book in the first place is I just got tired of watching the television and watching even some of what I consider, who I consider to be the good guys in the way of news anchors or journalists or pundits. You know, they'd throw their hands up in the air and say, wait a minute, we've got a Republican, it's a president, we've got a, you know, Republicans own the Senate, they own Congress, why can't we get anything done? And they were all mystified, and it was not a surprise to me whatsoever. And when you start understanding where the battle lines really are between a ruling class elite and the rest of us, or what I call we the people, then like I said, everything starts making sense.
That's pretty awesome stuff. I think you told me at one time, if you want to see what real politicians do, watch their behavior. You said behavior never lies. And I think we're going to see that this week with the Kavanaugh hearings. You're going to see the ruling class speak up. You're going to see them try and slow roll another one of Trump's appointments, which they've already done to the tune of somewhere around 400 appointments, I believe he still has to get in place, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm. Hundreds, yes.
Hundreds. Okay. All right. Who makes up the ruling class?
Okay, well, like I said, you have the ruling class politicians. And again, that's not every politician, but there's a lot of them, okay? And it's on both sides of the aisle, both the Democrats and the Republicans. And on the Democrat side, you know, the Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer crowd, the Hillary Clinton crowd, those are all the establishment. Now, the Bernie Sanders side is very leftist, and it tends to be their own popular uprising, so to speak, because they're just as sick of the establishment as everybody else is. But on the Republican side, you know, you've got like your Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, who is at least currently the Speaker of the House, and a whole group of people, a whole there's well over 100 Congress and senators on the Republican side that are not America First, we the people candidates. These are people that have a higher allegiance, Todd. They have a higher priority than America and serving the middle class and serving our country. And they feel like they are privy to a bigger picture, and they feel like their allegiance is more on a global level than it is on a nationwide level. So we have, to answer your question, we have ruling class politicians for sure, but there's other groups here or other demographics we need to talk about. The ruling class bureaucrats. I mean, I think everybody these days has heard the phrase the deep state. And what we're talking about here are people that are you know, political appointments to head up different agencies. And there's hundreds of them, thousands of them actually, that are appointed every year to head up agencies. These aren't the rank and file people. These are the heads of agencies. And it's not just the political appointments, it's the civil servants. Because when you have these political appointees go in, that's one of the things they do is they start reshaping their departments, hiring and firing, promoting like-minded people, and just literally starting to stuff all these bureaucracies with like-minded people. Well, for the last, we may talk about it, but for the last, well, really going on 30 years, the last 16 years for sure, the establishment has been firmly in control of the government, and they've been stuffing these agencies, you know, the State Department, the IRS, the Justice Department, everything you can think of, they've been stuffing them with establishment people. And again, there's that arrogance there. It's not a conspiracy. Please understand that. This isn't like a secret club that has meetings and secret passwords and use decoder rings or anything. It's not a conspiracy. It's just a culture that's set in where these people give each other the same feedback, believe in the same things. They believe in their own elitism, for lack of a better word, in their own destiny and their own right to rule. And they work together. They complement each other. They don't need to coordinate. They're on the same page anyway. So you have ruling class politicians, ruling class bureaucrats. You have the ruling class intelligentsia. Now, these are the college professors. These are the think tanks. These are the pundits you see on TV, the university professors. These are everybody out there that's supposed to be the quote-unquote smartest among us in society. And this intelligentsia are the same people that train a lot of our politicians. They permeate, well, these days it's not just the Ivy League schools. These days they permeate universities all across the country. And even getting into secondary level education. But these are the people that have trained a lot of these politicians. They've trained a lot of our State Department and bureaucratic personnel that go into civil service. So they've indoctrinated them in this kind of globalist vision or bigger than America type of vision or train of thought. So you have the ruling class intelligentsia. They're the same people that train our journalists. So that's why people talk about the mainstream media. It's really the ruling class media is what it is, because it's that same culture that's in that same feedback. They feel the same way. They think the same way. They're arrogant in the same way. And that's why you see them on the same page as everybody else in the establishment here. Now that also, the intelligentsia, guess what? They're the same people that teach, train, and indoctrinate all the judges coming out, all the attorneys coming out that become judges, right? So your active judiciary, the people that don't believe that the Constitution should be interpreted as written and enforced as written, the people that believe it's a living document that they have the right to change and alter as times go on, those are all products of that ruling class, or the teachings of the ruling class intelligentsia. So we've got ruling class politicians, bureaucrats, the ruling class media, intelligentsia, the ruling class judiciary. But you know what? Their strings are being pulled. And there is... if there is any such thing as a controlling force, it would be the ruling class oligarchy.
The money.
The money, absolutely. If you want to know anything, follow the money. And the ruling class oligarchs, this is where we get into more of the true globalist part of this. And I need to take a moment to say this, Todd, because it used to be that if anybody talked about globalism or globalist, you know, people thought, you're just getting into conspiracy stuff there. But the reality, I mean, it's very real. There is, I mean, it's openly talked about. I mean, I can show you, we could spend a week here going through all the documentation, the books written about it. These are people who have self-proclaimed visions of globalist communities that supersede the sovereignty of the United States and other countries. So this isn't any kind of theory at all. It's a very big reality. And the ruling class oligarchs, you know, we're talking about people like George Soros, Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg, Charles and David Koch, who are on the conservative side of things. I mean, I was, they're from Wichita, Kansas, and I was born and raised in Wichita. So I grew up, you know, everyone looked up to them as almost like heroes. And you know what? They've done a lot of great things in their life. But their allegiance is to the multinational corporations that they've built and that they run. And that's a global perspective. It's not just a national perspective. So they are very much in favor of cheap labor. They're very much in favor of these unfair trade deals that just literally hollow out the middle class in America, because the majority of their business, and especially the expansion in their business, is global. It's not domestic. And the same way with a lot of these other multinational corporations, they're not evil. They're not bad. A company, a business is not inherently good or evil. It's just, it is what it is. And the playing field right now is being set up in such a way that their best interest is not to protect the best interest of the United States. So you have all these global influences, all these multinational companies, and all the money that that represents. And that's what's going in and is manipulating all of these other groups. You know, Todd, I've always said that in any war, the chances are good that about 90% of the frontline soldiers really don't have any idea what the true reasons behind the war are. And I think that's the case here. I mean, if you go out and interview some of these pro, and sometimes people do it and you can see it, and it's, you know, it's pretty sad. But if you go out and interview some of these protesters that are resisting things right now, I can guarantee you 90%+ of them have no idea about the types of things we're talking about here. They don't understand how they're being manipulated. I mean, they wouldn't even be there. Their very transportation to many of the events so they can protest is paid for by these globalist groups we're talking about, by these oligarchs. So their very existence, the organization that helps put them together and organize the events, it's funded by many of these groups. The whole online presence, I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say it's billions of dollars that are being spent to further the political interests of the multinational corporations and what we call the ruling class oligarchy. Now, there's one last group. I said there's seven groups, really. And one last group, I call them the ruling class suck-ups. This is Hollywood, okay? These are our celebrities, some of our athletes out there. And, you know, to really explain this, you kind of need to think back to high school. And I was just fascinated in my research, because in the book we document everything I'm talking about tonight, and I should say this. This is not just opinion or some ideas we're throwing out. The book that we wrote and kind of started this whole thing is extremely well documented. I mean, there's over 10 pages of fine print citations and notations and sources and references for everything we're talking about. So everything is very, very real, and it's easy to check it out and verify it. But when you look at, and so when I was researching the Hollywood class, what we call the ruling class suck-ups, several things became very obvious to me. And it reminded me, if you go back to high school, I'm pretty convinced that just about every high school has a, you know, you always have these cliques, right? And you always have these groups. And, you know, you have the cool kids, right? The popular kids. But there's also all these people that'll do almost anything to be part of the cool kids group.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the suck-ups. That's the ruling. That's what Hollywood is. Okay. These are people that desperately want to hang around the truly rich and wealthy, the oligarchs, the ruling class oligarchs, the billionaires. These are people that want to be invited to Davos. They want to be invited to Sun Valley, Idaho. They want to rub shoulders with all these movers and shakers. And that's why you'll notice that when you ever see them talking about the issues, they really don't. Their knowledge tends to be very shallow. And it's because their opinions on what's going on, 9 times out of 10, it's not based on personal conviction or thinking the issues through. It's simply, they're taking a position simply that's going to, in their opinion, make them accepted or get them accepted by the
group. To fit in.
To fit in, exactly. Exactly. That's what it is. So those are the groups that kind of make up this ruling class culture. And like I said, they don't have meetings. They don't coordinate overtly. They're just on the same page. They support each other. They're not, they're complementary. Okay. Is the best.
Yeah. They live in a bubble. Exactly. And reiterate what they think to each other. And it's a crazy dynamic. And it seems as though there's a pipeline there that just keeps getting filled with more and more and more of the same think tank.
Absolutely. They feedback, they give each other feedback, they reinforce each other's opinions, right or wrong. They tell each other they're brilliant. They tell each other that they are destined to rule. They tell each other that they're smarter. I mean, you know, we could go into history and look at Plato's writing of the Republic, one of his famous works. And he outlines this type of government to where society's best and brightest are given the right, the mandate to rule. And, you know, that's, I mean, I don't, a lot of these people probably never studied Plato, but I'll guarantee you they see themselves in the same way.
Wow. If, some of the people that are listening to this probably the same school of thought as me. When they look at our government, they think, wow, how did we get to the point we're at now? Why didn't I see what was going on? I can remember George H. Bush talking about a little bit of the globalism stuff. Why don't you tell us how long this mentality has been going on, or when you can trace it back to the ruling class?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And again, we go into all of these things in further detail in the book. I just, for the time's sake, we just want to kind of go pretty quick over them right now. But what you're talking about, this whole ruling class or elitism attitude, this whole culture actually had its origins back right after the Berlin Wall came down, right after the Cold War ended. And of course, that was during Ronald Reagan's term. And then George H. Bush, which is George W. Bush's father, right? He was Ronald Reagan's vice president, and he won the election. He had a 4-year term. But the thing was, Bush was not a conservative like Reagan. A lot of people have forgotten this. Bush was what I, at the time, I called the country of the country club Republican set, or the establishment. And he was a former head of the CIA. And they had a vision for the world post-Cold War. And the United States would take a lead with that and would kind of help mold the world in their image. Now, you know, Todd, I want to say there's a lot of things with George H. Bush that I did not agree with. However, I'm not going to tell you their image was bad in the sense that, yes, if you've got a world that's trading together and doing a lot of business together and has great communication, there's less and less reason to go to war with each other. So, you know, that's a great vision. George H. Bush talked about the shining city on the hill that could be an example. You know, the United States as a country could be an example to all these other countries. So the vision, I think, starts out well enough. But the problem is this. When you start making all those global connections and you have all of these individuals and groups that are welding power globally, they're welding power over and above their own sovereignty of their independent nations. Well, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it didn't take very long throughout the last 30 years for the group, individuals and groups in control to strongly start resisting any change in their control status. And it's gotten to the point now when they elected Donald Trump, they flat out are refusing. They're refusing the peaceful transfer of power. Because again, whether it's Republican or Democrat in office, it's made no difference. The establishment, the ruling class culture, has been in control for 30 years, one way or another. And they're not about to give it up. They're not about to let, and you know, the peaceful transfer of power, or transition of power, has been one of the landmarks of the United States. It's one of the hallmarks. It's what's made our democracy work. It's what's set us apart from every country in the history of this planet.
Absolutely.
And when you see people openly go out there with signs saying resist, Hillary Clinton tells people to resist. I mean, if you truly understand history, if you understand political science, if you understand constitutional law, what she is literally calling for is an about face of the fundamentals declared in the United States Constitution and the things that made this country great. So that's where we're at today. That's kind of how it came about, and it's morphed. Well, here's the part I need to include to make sense of this, because what started out as really, I think, benevolent as an idea and a vision of what a global community could be has morphed from altruistic to authoritarian, because the globalism being enforced today, the globalism being shoved down our throat, is global socialism. It is it is literally a re-transfer or a redistribution of wealth. And because the United States is the richest country in the world, well, we're the piggy bank. I think you hear Donald Trump talking about that. People want to raid our piggy bank. That's exactly what he's referring to. And we're buying the compliance of all these other countries, buying authority and buying control via distributing our jobs, our middle class, our wealth to these other countries. And that falls right in line with the multinational corporations and their desire for international markets. I mean, it's all, you just follow the money. It all comes together and it's corrupted. And so we have a corrupted elite that cares more about their elitist global vision and society than they do the American people. And that's how we got here.
So that's what unites them. I guess you could say their quest for power, the money. And now it's almost as if with Trump in office that there's a fox in the head, in the hen house, so to speak. And now you see them uniting on every level to try and keep that from happening.
Well, that's exactly right. You see, here's the problem politically, and remind me, Todd, is I want to get into talking about how specifically our politicians and Mitch McConnell are resisting and some of the things they're doing. But what's happening here is that Donald Trump has come in, and he has threatened, for the first time in 30 years, he has threatened their control and threatened their rule because they have no power over him. And I want you to think about the professional political system, the political class that we have is absolutely beholden to the money that comes through mainly from these ruling class oligarchs and the multinational corporations. You know, if you're a senator in Congress or if you're a congressman, it's not so much that they pay you money under the table, although I think some of that's happened. But what it is, it's when you leave Congress. You see, if you play ball with the establishment, with the ruling class, you're set for life. You'll have your jobs on the board of directors. You'll have your consulting gigs. They'll hire you in these lobbyist firms. You'll be able to send your kids to the finest schools in the country. You'll be able to have a wonderful retirement. You can triple, quintuple your family income and fortune. I mean, you can literally set your family up for generations if you play ball with the establishment. So it takes either politicians that are totally independently wealthy, like a Donald Trump, or it takes very, very brave people. And we've got some of them in Congress. I mean, I'm thinking about, people like Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, Louie Gohmert, David Nunes, Ron DeSantis. And I think most of those are House guys. There's others. There's people in the Senate. But it takes
Rand Paul.
Rand Paul's a good one. People that are independent-minded, people that are willing to stand up. And I don't even always agree with all of them 100% of the time, but I will tell you this, they're not establishment.
Right.
They're not controlled by the ruling class. And I think that's what's incredibly important in this whole equation. So
I think our forefathers never intended for politicians to be a career move. And
no,
that's where we're at.
Well, it is. And it goes along with this elitism. It goes along with this arrogance. I use an analogy a lot of times of the medical profession. You know, if you're a doctor, you've gone through all that schooling. I mean, you obviously your IQ has to be a certain level to learn what you need to learn. I don't think anybody would disagree that it's not tough to become a medical doctor in the United States. It's rigorous, takes a lot of years, a lot of effort. And you know, when you become a doctor, then you have certain protections under the law. For example, nobody else can practice medicine without a license, right? I mean, you can have different types of doctors and different philosophies, but at the end of the day, your expertise, your unique education, expertise, and experience in the field of medicine is recognized. Well, the political class thinks they deserve the same thing.
They're entitled.
Yes, they feel like they're entitled. They feel like they are uniquely educated and uniquely experienced and, you know, uniquely knowledgeable in these areas. And they strongly feel that nobody else should be able to practice politics without their approval anyway. So you have to join the club, so to speak. And, you know, and so that's how they protect their own. It's an arrogance. They honestly believe this. I don't know if they've ever verbalized it, many of them, but it's an attitude. It goes back to that Plato's Republic again, but it's an attitude they have, and it's undeniable. It's not, these are not secrets. Again, this is not some theory. These are openly known traits in Washington, D.C. I mean, it's just the reality of what is, but the mainstream media, the ruling class media, doesn't talk about it. Even a lot of the good guys out there, quote unquote, don't talk about it because it's just too confusing. People are used to looking at things in terms of Republicans versus Democrats. So this is the type of stuff that goes over the head of a whole lot of people.
And that's why they want it. They want you and I focused on Republican-Democrat fight.
You're right. Like we just learned in the fight with ISIS. If you can't name your enemy, you cannot defeat them.
Absolutely.
And one of the things they've become real good at is obfuscating the issues and the battles. And so, you know, it's only very recently that you've even heard the terms ruling class discussed on the television, let alone establishment, because again, they keep everybody focused on Republican versus Democrat. And there are differences, Todd. I don't want to pretend there's not, but,
sure.
but the differences pale in comparison compared to the differences between we the people and the ruling class establishment.
Yeah, there's a long ways between those two, for sure. So now that President Trump's in office, why doesn't he just get rid of the bureaucrats and the judges and stuff that are slow rolling what he has in mind?
Well, you know, you kind of touched on it earlier. You talked about the 400 appointments or whatever the number is. Mitch McConnell is head of the Senate, right? And he's in control of all this. And of course, he blames Chuck Schumer and the Democrats for slow walking everything. All the politicians blame each other and point fingers. You know, here's the bottom line truth to this. If anyone ever confuses Mitch McConnell for a non-establishment person or a Trump supporter, I mean, they need to recheck their thinking, because there should be no confusion. Mitch McConnell does not support Donald Trump. He is the epitome of a ruling class politician. As the leader of the Senate, as a Senate leader, he could all but snap his fingers and have all of these appointments go through. As a matter of fact, their vacation, their August recess recently was kind of in jeopardy. And he did exactly that. And they approved like 70 people in 24 hours. Now, there's still a ton left, okay,
don't right. get
me wrong, but he proved he can do it. He, right in just that one day, he proved he has the power to get all of this stuff done. Now, here's the reason they're not doing it, because there is a reason for this. You see, a lot of these people, so like with Mitch McConnell, he's an establishment guy. He does not want Trump's agenda to go through. So when you stall all of these people going in, remember, it's not rank and file appointments. These are the people that go in and would clean house. These are the people that would do the hiring and firing and promoting. These are the people that would restaff those agencies in the face of Trump, in the face of America First, of the current administration. So by slow walking that, he dramatically slows that the loss of power of the establishment in our government. But there's another reason also. And this is perhaps even more insidious, because there are a lot of politicians in Washington. Some of them are ruling class. Some of them are not ruling class. Some of them are kind of in that limbo in between. And but there are people that know absolutely, like everybody in Washington does, that there is an effort to remove Donald Trump from office. You know,
they're not even trying to hide it now. They're saying it.
Oh, exactly. In the book, when did we put that book out? Over a year ago, I think, we were talking about a soft coup and documenting all these different elements of what was going on and what the strategy was and how to remove Donald Trump from office. Today, you've got every pundit in the world writing books and getting rich off of them, saying basically the same stuff. But the point is this. There's a lot of people in Washington that have known this for a long time, but they've been concerned that it would happen. They felt it probably likely, because they've never seen anybody defeat the establishment. So a lot of people that even normally, a lot of politicians that even normally might be tempted to be on the good side of things, they've sat back and kept their mouths shut. Because why would you risk your kids' future and college education on taking a stance that would anger a group of people that probably are not going to be defeated? You know, to take a stance to support a president that's probably going to be removed from office.
And there's one thing that stands out to me too when you're talking about this. They've put an MO or something in place that absolutely protects them, and that's the Byrd Rule. Mm-hmm. Without spending a bunch of time on that, what's the Byrd Rule? How does that run interference for the elitist?
Well, it's just one of a number of different ways that the establishment, this, and the Byrd Rule is in the Senate, so this would apply to the Senate, how the Senate covers itself and really confuses the American people about what's going on. The Byrd Rule is simply a rule that was passed by Senator Byrd, or sponsored by Senator Byrd. You know, it's not been there long, maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago, 30 years, during the ruling class reign here, that says that many of the votes in the Senate are not a simple majority. There's 100 senators, and you know the Republicans own 51 seats, so they have the majority. They should be able to pass anything, right? Wrong. The Byrd Rule says you have to have 60 votes. Now, what most people don't understand, and what the media 99% of the time doesn't bother to point out is that that's not in the Constitution. The Constitution right. says simple majority. But because of this rule they put in place, and that's why I say that Mitch McConnell could snap his fingers. He could do away with the rule in a heartbeat and just make it a simple majority. They did that for the Supreme Court nominations. They could do that for all these other appointments if he wanted to.
But he does not want to.
Exactly. And it gives him cover so he can go to the public and say, gee, golly darn it, I wish we could do it, but we just can't. You know, those darn Democrats and Chuck Schumer, they're just resisting us. We can't get 60 votes. So it gives them cover to be able to resist and like they want to anyway. That's just one example.
Okay. So you spoke a little bit about this. All congressmen and senators are not part of the ruling class. So we have identified some that are. How do we go about getting rid of the ruling class?
Well, you know, that's a great point because, let me give you an example of what doesn't work. And this is what's so confounding to a lot of people. We've been talking about Mitch McConnell, so let's continue down that road. You know, he's the leader of the Senate, right? He wields a tremendous amount of power. You're not going to have success trying to go in and remove him from office. And now, first of all, understand this. We want the seat to be held by Republicans. So we don't want to go into a general election and try to put a Democrat in there because you'd end up with another establishment candidate or a leftist, one or the other. Right. So what you have to do is you have to attack it via the primaries. And so but the problem is you're never going to primary Mitch McConnell because he's very popular. He's very well known in the state of Kentucky. He's got a lot of power there, a lot of control there. He's got a lot of money supporting him there. He's been the incumbent forever. Everyone knows who he is. And you're just not going to be successful trying to do that. So what you do, and these are some of the advanced strategies that we use, Todd, that are so effective, and nobody's really focused on it like this. And if it's okay, we'll touch on that before we end the call. But
yeah, nobody's ever done this. I think it's important that you bring it up. Yes.
Yeah, so what we want to do with the strategy, this is one of many strategies, but it's an important one to understand. What we do is we don't go after Mitch McConnell. We go after the senators that support him. You know, he's the Senate leader because he's got enough senators that vote for him to lead the Senate. And that's what gives him the power over all those other senators. So we go after and we undermine his political base within the Senate. And we can go after the other establishment Republican senators in their primaries. And as his support base erodes and as we replace those senators, because they're not as locked in as he is, and we replace them with good America First candidates and senators, then all of a sudden what will happen is Mitch McConnell will resign. He won't go through the humiliation of not being reelected Senate leader. He won't, you know, he'll just end up resigning.
And that's where you get the name for the movement, Primary of the Ruling Class.
That's correct. That's correct.
You know, if you watch the mainstream media, or as Trump refers to them, fake news sometimes, you and I would think that we are definitely in the minority, that 3/4 of the country absolutely hates Donald Trump, can't stand anything about him. Is that true?
Yeah, no, it's not. You know, on the website, we've posted a map of the country, and it shows in red all of the counties in the United States where the majority of people voted for Donald Trump. And then in blue, of course, it shows the counties where the majority voted for Hillary Clinton. Todd, almost the entire map is red.
Absolutely, it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible to look at. Now, what we do, though, on the map is we go in and we start pointing to these little areas of blue and we start explaining them. So like up in the northwest of the country around the Seattle area and Oregon, you know, that's where your social media groups are, right in that blue blob right there. So we point that out. And then you go a little bit south of there into Northern California around Sacramento. Well, that's Silicon Valley. You know, that's your Google. That's all these other places around there that make up, they're far left leaning, that make up our high tech world. Now you go on south there along the coast of California, you're going to get down to Southern California and that big blue blob there. Well, that's your Hollywood suck ups.
That's jackpot.
Yes, that's where they all reside. They live, they hang out, they congregate. And then, you know, you can move across the country to the upper northeast. You're going to see New York area. And, you know, that's that is where 90% of the mainstream media
and all the support groups of the media and everything involved with that. That's where they all live and congregate. You go a little bit south of there down the coast, you get into the Washington, D.C. area, 90% of our government, our employees, politicians, all the support groups, the lobbyists, everything based with the federal government is all based along that corridor, along the seaboard there, and it's solid blue. Now, what's interesting about that is there's still some other blue areas on the country, on the map, but almost without exception, every single one of those blue areas are area, and we're talking about like in the southern tip of Florida, around Miami, right? The southern tip of Texas. You can go into New Mexico, even a stretch up into Colorado, even up in Minnesota, part of Minnesota, yes. There's a blue section, okay? These are all areas that have been dramatically affected by immigration, both legal and illegal. And so if you understand where those areas are and kind of take them out, we dominate the country. We have, right. we own the country. People that are what I call good conservative, like-minded people, people of good character, good thought, you know, the
quintessential America first.
America first people. We own the country, but the problem, Todd, is that the establishment owns all the controlling centers of the country. You know, the social media, the high tech, the traditional media, you know, our government, the politicians, I mean, even Hollywood, which is terribly influential, right? All of these areas of control, centers of control, are owned by the left. They're owned by the establishment and controlled by them. So the problem is, yeah, we own the country. We don't have control of the country. And right. And that's why it looks the way it is. Now, there's a way around that. And what we've got to do is what we talked about. We've got to primary some of these ruling class politicians so that we can start changing things. But we need to really understand what's happening here and what's going on. And if you want to know the basis for the founding of PRCPAC, the primary of the ruling class movement, this is an easy way to encapsulate it, an easy way to explain it. And if you go back and look at history, in the Industrial Revolution, you know, it was a great time in the history of America. I mean, factories were popping up left and right. You know, Henry Ford invented the first production line. I think it was his Model A Fords he had coming through there. The country was getting wealthy. I mean, just tremendously, we were booming and growing. But there was a problem because the factory owners, the oligarchs, the ruling class oligarchs of the time, if you will, they were treading all over the people, just taking huge advantage of the workers. And I mean, you had children working in factories, you know, 6 and 7 days a week, low wages. I mean, no health care. No, I mean, it was just terrible conditions, not safe. It was bad. And and it stayed that way. And it didn't change until the workers united. They banded together. It was, and I'm not a big union guy, just to clear the air here. I'm not, but my point is this: the people banded together. And they demanded better conditions. That's how we came up with our child labor laws. That's how, you know, better working hours, better conditions, and everything else came about because the people organized together. Well, the thing is, today we don't need a labor union. We need a political union.
Right on.
You know, the people in the country, exactly. the good people, the middle Americans, the middle class, the America first people of all demographic statues and income levels, all the good people, America first people in the country need to come together and we need to organize because that's the only way we're going to stand up to the elitists that control the country. So that's what this is about. When you have, our movement will ultimately be tens of thousands of people. And when you have those people each donating a little bit of time and a little bit of money to the cause, that can add up to a war chest of tens of millions of dollars.
And a lot of people, which is what it takes. You're going to play in politics, you got to have money.
Well, you do. You absolutely do. Now, one of the good things about what we're doing, though, messing around in the primaries, and we're still going to be active in the general elections, too. So I want to, you know, state that. But as far as I know, we're going to be about the only group out there that's truly identifying the enemy as the establishment, as the ruling class, and is absolutely dedicated to attacking the primaries, to attacking them legally and peacefully in the primaries and removing them from office. Now, the cool thing is your dollars go further in primary elections. Many House elections are won for as little as $48,000.
Wow, it's not very much money.
No, it's really not. Now, in the Senate, it's a little bit more expensive, but you have primary campaigns in the Senate, one for as little as $1 million or less, with budgets that small for the campaign. So we have an opportunity to make a tremendous impact just by being organized, by understanding what we're doing, and by moving forward together.
And that's what this provides, is organization, a bunch of like-minded people that want America put first again. Well, I'll tell you what, Bill, great conversation. Do you have anything else you want to add? We're about out of time for today, I think.
No, Todd, I just want to say thank you. I mean, it's good people like you that have you know, helped make this and put this together. This whole podcast was your idea, and I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm just very grateful for people like you and others to come in with this. I'm humbled by the quality of people that have banded around us, and I want to say thank you again.
Well, I want to thank you for your vision and spending some time with us today and maybe laying out a grand strategy for not only our new members, but people that have been with us for a while. And I also want to tell everybody, this is a great way for all our primary of the ruling class political action committee, independent affiliate members and non-affiliate donors to stay plugged in and stay up to date on what we're doing. We'll be making new announcements and other activities that we're going to be up to through these podcasts. We'll be interviewing some other various leaders in the organization. And then what I'm most excited about is we will be putting out some updates, political events, what happened this week in politics, gaining a lot of behind the scenes insight to what's actually going on, the real news, not the news you see on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, all that. But you're not going to want to miss it. So set aside some time in your calendar every week to tune in, listen to us while you're going down the road or whatever's convenient for you. But once again, thanks for your time. I'm Todd Workman. This has been the inaugural podcast of Primary of the Ruling Class Political Action Committee. We look forward to visiting you in the future. Thanks.